Welcome to the Jazz Shapers podcast from Mishkon Dorea. What you're about to hear was originally broadcast on Jazz FM. However, the music has been cut due to rights issues.
The world's greatest jazz, soul and blues from the world's greatest artists. This is Jazz FM. Jazz Shapers with Elliot Moss in partnership with Mishkon Dorea. It's business, but it's personal.
Welcome to Jazz Shapers with me, Elliot Moss, bringing the shapers of the business world together with a musician shaping jazz, soul and blues. My guest today is Will Pearson, co-founder of Ocean Bottle, a company dedicated to enabling individuals around the world to make a global impact on ocean plastic. Having grown up partly in Norway, spending summers sailing in the fjords, how nice does that sound, with his grandparents and developing his love for the ocean, it was while working as a deckhand on a yacht that Will saw firsthand the side effects of plastic consumption. He returned a man on a mission, determined to find a solution. Meeting his future co-founder, Nick, on their first day at London Business School, the friends brought their new idea, Ocean Bottle, to market in 2019, with the promise that each reusable water bottle sold would fund the collection of 1,000 ocean-bound plastic bottles. Giving back 15% of their revenue to plastic collection projects around the world and enabling people to exchange their plastic waste for money and access to social resources, and aiming to create behaviour change around refilling reusable bottles, Ocean Bottle have recently hit a new milestone. They've collected 20 million kilos. That's right, you heard it correctly. 20 million kilos of plastic, and that's around 2 billion bottles. But their aim is far greater than that. It's great to have you. You're the co-founder of Ocean Bottle.
Well, Elliot, thank you so much for having me on. It's great to be here.
You're being polite now.
We're locked in.
We're locked in. We're talking just before we started the programme about what young people say. Young people say a lot of things. They say that we're ruining our planet. They say that climate change is real. They say that, what can I do? And there you were, a young man who just started business school, and you met this man, Nick, another man, and you said, well, we are going to do something. Tell me what problem you're trying to solve.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. I think, you know, there is a lot of fear out there, and I think the fear is growing. And I think, you know, we don't really need more apathy. We need action. And so with Ocean Bottle, you know, we really saw a problem around ocean plastic pollution. It was around the time that Blue Planet 2 had come out with David Attenborough, the legend himself. And we really saw that individuals wanted to do something about this challenge and just didn't really know where to start. And so, yeah, Ocean Bottle is really just all about enabling people to be part of, you know, global impact. And, you know, those collective decisions can kind of add up to something bigger. And yeah, we've made a good dent, but yeah, we've got a long way to go.
Look, we're all connected with nature. Yeah, I mean, I'm a Londoner. I've not lived in Norway. I'm not part Norwegian like you. I haven't sailed around the fjords, but I feel obviously a connection. When I relax and let go of daily life, I know that I'm in the right place, and being a human, we're very lucky. For you, it was slightly exaggerated. Was it from a very young age that you felt super connected, and is that still something that you feel today?
Yeah, definitely. I think being half Norwegian, having been lucky to spend time there growing up, we are really spoiled in Norway with nature, just the lack of people, so much space, and just a lot of kind of undisturbed, untouched nature.
What was that like as a kid? Was it just...
It's like when I think back to being a kid, it was sort of like a dream. Mm. You know, it really was. Like, we'd be on a boat and we'd look through a little sort of orange binocular that would look down under the water so you could kind of see all the sea life that was going on below. And I remember just spending hours, staring at that, or like just looking out at the kind of blue horizon. So yeah, definitely kind of stuck with me and has continued to. And, the reality of living in London, you feel quite disconnected from it. Mm. Standing on the tube, probably the last thing you're thinking about is the ocean, let alone nature. So,
can you remember how you felt when you were that age and just there in the water?
I think there was a sense of wonder. Obviously, you've got that sense of wonder as a kid, right? That's kind of baked in to you, and that kind of goes a little bit with time. But it was really a sense of awe about the scale of it, the beauty of it. And that was even at quite a young age, I think. It's hard to really remember those memories, but I think it definitely stuck with me.
An indelible mark, most likely for you. Whereas I grew up at the end of the Jubilee line, not quite as salubrious. Will Pearson's
well,
my
can
business.
Swap back.
Well, I'd like to swap back. I wouldn't mind. We'd probably be in very different places if we'd have both swapped lives as well. Will Pearson's my business shaper. Stay with me for much more. He's the co-founder of Ocean Bottle. They are doing fantastic things. Well, they're doing fantastic things because you're selling nice things. But that's at the end of the day, right? The product has to be good. People have told me that over the years, and it's sort of common sense. But you're using one at the minute. Can you just lift up your?
Here we go, the OB.
There it
always
is.
Always glued at the hip. Always glued in my hand.
Tell me about. So you launch Ocean Bottle in 2019. What informs your design aesthetic? How do you get to where you got to? Because that doesn't just happen.
Yeah, I think we knew really early on that we couldn't just have a product that was kind of impact led. It wouldn't be enough. In the world we're in. And so we knew that we kind of had to really go hardcore on the product design and really create a product that was best in category. So we actually designed the product in Oslo, in Norway. Spent a year and a half designing and developing it. It was something like 3,000 hours designing a water bottle, which is sort of, you think it's kind of... It's ridiculous.
But it's not, though, is it? So kind of, just give me an example of the kind of thinking that goes into a water bottle.
Yeah, so for us, we lent into three things. So one was aesthetics. We wanted it to be minimalist, Scandinavian, something that people wouldn't get bored of and something that would actually appeal to a lot of people as well. So that was actually really important that, like, you know, looking at it, it kind of, you know, looked great. Two was functionality. So it was actually the first insulated bottle that you could put in the dishwasher. And it's got kind of a dual opening, wide lid, so you know you can fill it with any kind of drink.
A dual opening?
Yeah, so you can pop open this part, which
he's
has got
demonstrating
sort of wide
right
bit,
now. Yes.
Demonstrating to you in the studio. So yeah, if you want cold water, chuck some ice in. But if you want to chuck a cocktail in there as well, be my guest. So it's function is a great product as well, and people seem to really love it. And then thirdly, obviously core is the sustainability of the product itself. And so yeah, we've invested a lot in recycled materials, but it's a continuous journey because the materials that are available out there, you know, is still not perfect. So we're continuously sort of pushing forward on that.
When you finish, it suddenly occurred to me, when you finish with your water bottle, whenever that is, what do you do with it? I mean, does it get recycled? Is everything recyclable?
It's got every Ocean Bottle comes with a 10-year warranty. And we've got a sort of spare parts program so you can keep them going. You know, like if your kid rips off the loop and starts chewing it, we'll send you. We'll send you.
Well, if they get hungry, I mean, often I do offer them things.
Silicon is quite tasty.
Yeah,
actually.
I mean, the kitchen is full of. It's like it's a Pandora's box for children.
Yeah.
Generally, you want to eat the food in the fridge, but you know, you may get hungry over there with those materials. But when you're making that stuff and you're 3,000 hours in, and then all the other things that come with the startup and all the connective, you know, challenges. Are you in those moments super mission-led? People talk about being mission-led, and obviously, well, you are a mission-led business, you're a mission-led person. Or is the reality that it's just stuff to do?
I think it's a bit of both. So I think you have those moments in the week where it's kind of mission-led, and you know, you might have a moment in the shower, and you're kind of, you know, you're dreaming of something on the impact front. But really, it's a lot of stuff to do. I think it's just a never-ending to-do list. So it's really like any business, but I suppose you try and bake in the impact elements and they become a core part of you know, what you're doing.
And the combination of the two of you from the beginning, how you obviously met, I think, on your first day at London Business School and at your MBA, still going together. Your role is slightly different now, but you're essentially both there. What have been, I read somewhere that you worked on your relationship, you got some external help, as it were, which I think is very sensible because relationships are hard at the best of times. When you're in business, it's even harder. Just tell me a little bit about the dynamic.
Yeah, definitely.
As honest as you like.
No, for sure. You know, it is being, yeah, having a co-founder relationship is like a marriage, so it's really important. But what I can say is that, you know, it really was a meeting of minds kind of from the beginning. So I'd studied engineering, I wanted to convert into kind of business and, you know, creating impact through that. And Nick had actually studied history. And he really wanted to kind of reshape capitalism from the inside. So that was where, you know, we met. I wanted to do something about ocean plastic. He wanted to do a kind of business for good venture. So the fact that our values were kind of so aligned from the start really has helped massively along the way because you know, even if you're in disagreement about one particular thing, ultimately you can kind of, you know, you can find a common ground and figure out a good way forward because you're aligned on your values. And yeah, it's been an absolute roller coaster. We've had some cracking moments together.
And some moments that have almost cracked you.
And the total absolute lows. Yeah. So, you know, but starting out, you've got no team, no resource. We didn't really know anyone back then. We didn't know any investors. So it was, I suppose you're doing every aspect of the business. But everyone that's on Jazz Shapers has probably spoken about that. Yeah, so yeah,
it's a journey. I'm going to come back to a specific thing and a question for how the partnership held up at that moment. It involves water bottles and Glastonbury. Don't get into sort of post-traumatic stress disorder. Much more come up from my guest, Will Pearson. You'll find out about Glastonbury as well. If you stay with me, he's going to be back in a couple of minutes. Right now, we're going to hear a taster from the Michigan Innovation Series, which you can find on all the major podcast platforms. Lydia Kellett invites business founders to share their practical advice and industry insights, if you're lucky, for those of you thinking about starting your very own thing. In this clip, we hear from Paul Beistel, CEO of Houten Bio, a technology company aiming to decouple long-distance transportation from fossil fuels with HBX. I love it when people brand stuff. They're zero-carbon biofuel.
The Michigan Innovation Series. Inspiration from founders of cutting-edge businesses. In association with Jazz Shapers, with Michigan Dorea.
What advice would you give to those who wish to bring a new idea to the energy industry?
I think parts of the energy industry are quite closed. They do what they've always done. They tend to be very safety critical. And actually, if you're worried about and you need to keep people alive, you have to be cautious about new. So you need some resilience. You need the ability to navigate obstacles. But I would say, I think the tide is turning. I think the energy industry as a whole is seeing lots of new opportunities. They're used to spending capital on large projects. They're used to going large. So if you can convince them what you're doing is good, there's a big opportunity. And I think the final thing is actually the energy sector needs people to not avoid it. I talked to lots of new graduates who are saying, I don't want to work for oil and gas. And I kind of get why they take that position. But the only way you can evolve an industry is by actively engaging and moving it along with them.
The Michigan Innovation Series, in association with Jazz Shapers, with Michigan Dorea.
This is Jazz Shapers with Elliot Moss, in partnership with Michigan Dorea. It's business, but it's personal.
You can enjoy all our former Business Shapers on the Jazz Shapers podcast. Lucky you. And you can hear this very program again if you pop Jazz Shapers into your favorite podcast platform. My guest today is Will Pearson. I hope you've been listening. Co-founder of Ocean Bottle, a company dedicated to enabling individuals around the world to make a global impact on ocean plastic. And it is that thing, isn't it? It's the dent. Because people do ask, I care, but what can I do? And you're sort of trying to bridge the gap. It started off, and I mentioned earlier, the Glastonbury experience and when things don't go right. You talked to me about the 3,000 hours that went into product design. But in the beginning, when you were trying stuff out, I understand that there were leaky bottles and things weren't so pretty. Talk to me a little bit about that and then more importantly, how you dealt with it and what you learned from it.
Yeah, I mean, I think every startup has had its rocky moments and we've had more than our fair few. There's definitely a couple of anecdotes I could share. Now or after. But yeah, Glastonbury was a really fun one. So Nick, my co-founder, he was really trying to like hunt down every, I suppose both of us, we were sort of knocking down every door possible, right, that we could find. How could we, you know, get some celebrities involved? How could we get, you know, the product into interesting spaces? So at one point he actually phoned the James Bond producer's manager to try and get us onto the film set. Which almost went ahead. And then it was sort of actually, who are you? and that all fell apart. Glastonbury was really interesting. We had basically created the first batch of 1,000 ocean bottles. So it's the first 1,000 in the world. I've got a couple left.
What year was this?
I'm not
this?
Sure they've gone up in value, actually, because they were all leaking.
This is 2020 or
this
something?
This was 2019.
2019,
yeah, so it was 2019,
okay.
Ahead of COVID, yeah. and the world turning upside down. We obviously invested a huge amount into the design. We'd found this amazing production partner. And ultimately, they ended up, you know, not really kind of fulfilling on the promise of the design that we developed. And so probably a third of those bottles were leaking. And we even had on the packaging, you know, anti-leak. Seal and all that
the
stuff.
The very best.
But people were quite kind about it. You know, we had emails coming in. We had one musician's drummer had got a bottle and said, you know, could you send me another lid? It seems to be leaking everywhere. but people were, you know, they were into the mission.
Do you think did it matter that it didn't work?
No, I think it was just all part of the journey, part of the learning. And I suppose it made us actually take that part of it, sort of, you know, the operations and production, because I was kind of doing that, trying to do that, down at the warehouse, sending out bottles to the wrong places and, you know, all that good stuff. And then, yeah, we end up hiring an amazing ops person who's now actually our director of ops. So she's stayed with us since the beginning.
And are those sorts of things the wake-up calls that you need in a startup, where you go, I'm trying, but I kind of know I'm winging it?
You'd probably rather not have them, you know, if I'm honest. But, yeah, I suppose you learn from every mistake you make. And if you don't learn, you end up doing it again. And the second time around, you're like, well, now we should probably definitely do something about this.
Will Pearson is my business shaper today. He's the co-founder of Ocean Bottle, talking about when things go wrong. And you're laughing about it now, but the serious side of it, of course, and I've read about this, and I think you've been quite open, you're a bit of a perfectionist. You know, the world is on your shoulders in a way, literally, because you're not just, you know, I help people grow their businesses. You're trying to stop the planet dying and the oceans disappearing. I mean, there's a slight dissonance between those two, but there's a serious moral obligation on you that you're going to feel personally. There's the business side of it. There's the startup pressure. It got too much for you, and you've talked about that. Tell me a little bit about your journey there and where you are now. And you look like you're on top of things, but what was happening for you?
Yeah. Well, I think you know, a lot of entrepreneurs probably experience, you know, burnout and their own challenges on the journey, because it is a tough one. And for me personally, I think I had, you know, I just put a lot of expectation on myself. That, you know, this was definitely going to succeed. It was going to, you know, we were going to save the ocean as a single startup, which was ridiculous.
Within a couple of weeks, you know, of starting,
yeah,
obviously.
Exactly. I mean. And I quite quickly learned that actually there's other amazing organisations out there, initiatives that are doing great stuff, and it really is a collective effort. So I think that one actually went away more quickly. But that pressure stayed there for quite a long time. And I think I really had kind of, you know, the company was really a part of me. So if the company failed, I've kind of failed in life, was sort of my mentality. And I think that was a really unhealthy thing. And so what's been great, since I had a sort of, I remember it was probably 2022, I sort of really couldn't see the wood for the trees and just sort of hit the wall a little bit. And yeah, since then I've really just tried to decouple myself, you know, my identity from the company.
And how have you done that, Will? Because it's one thing conceptually where you go, I totally get it. When you're in it, though, in it and you're really in it, and the black cloud is upon you, you can't see the wood for the tree. So how did you practically get out of that, and how did you stay out of that?
Yeah, so I think it's a few things and trying to do them quite deliberately. And one of them was really making time for like things like exercise, seriously as a sort of circuit breaker. Doing meditation, just doing that for a while. Failed at that recently.
It's quite hard, actually.
It's really hard.
Yeah,
it's
sounds
really
ridiculous,
hard.
But
I'm someone with, you know, incessant thinking, loads of ideas. Can't, you know,
I can
can't
relate
stop.
To that.
Exactly. Yeah. Perfect. we'll leave the brainstorm for after. I think those parts were definitely sort of part of that decoupling. And then it was also sort of being a little bit less involved in the day-to-day of the business.
So intentionally removing yourself.
Yeah, exactly. Just having a little bit of distance from stuff. And then actually, you could, you know, we've hired people that are way better at things than I am. And so we've got this incredible team now. And, you know, seeing them get on with the things that they're really good at is awesome. And so that, for me personally, has been really great, actually, to get, you know, through those early days where you're doing absolutely everything, to slightly more established, not established.
But do you end up, I mean, it may sound strange, but do you talk to yourself? I do. I mean, I say this only because in high pressure moments, I do have a word with myself. I just wondered if you did or if I'm the only lunatic.
Yeah, no, I probably do talk to myself, but it's probably more of the like ideas and okay. getting carried away with, oh, we could do this, let's do this, why aren't we doing this?
Okay.
You know, that kind of thinking.
But did you feel yourself coming out of it? Was there a moment when you go, okay, I'm starting to handle this?
Yeah, definitely. You know, it was definitely a few months, yeah. But you know, now, yeah, it's exciting. I'm sort of, and that process as well, you know, you do fall a bit out of love with what you've created because you've sort of created your own nightmare in some respects. But definitely, you know, fallen back in love with the company, the mission and everything. So it's incredibly exciting.
Final chat come up with Will Pearson, and we've got some soul for you from Alice Clark. That's all in just a moment. You'll hear how his excitement is manifesting itself for the future of Ocean Bottle.
This is Jazz Shapers with Elliot Moss. In partnership with Mishkondorea. It's business, but it's personal.
Will Pearson is my business shaper, and he was talking about how he's fallen back in love with Ocean Bottle. That sense of not being alone is critical. You talked about other endeavours that are looking towards saving our oceans. I've read a lot about you bringing together other businesses to talk to big business to say, what can we do with regard to addressing plastic waste issues. Other member of your board said something to you, which I think is worth you sharing with me now, just very briefly, about this love point. Just can you share that, and then also talk a bit about your coach as well, because I think that's something else that's relevant to how you've managed to be in a good place.
Yeah, definitely. Well, we had an amazing board member who, you know, had been a sort of a multi-time founder? We'll call it a multi-time founder today. New word.
A serial founder.
Serial founder, thank you. Serial founder. So
I like multi-time more, though. I think that's better. Multi-time. Hey, welcome to multi-time.
And I've really been through the ringer, and so has experienced it. And yeah, he said to both of us, both Nick and myself, yeah, guys, if you don't enjoy the journey, you know, no one else is going to enjoy it for you. Mm. And when it's over, you know, if whatever happens to the company, it will be over. So you kind of, you know, you need to enjoy it. And actually, if you're enjoying it, everything becomes better. I think the business just moves forward better,
yeah.
Actually.
Yeah.
And then on the coaching side, yeah, I did get a coach as I had a bit of a, you know, when I got into that sort of tricky period. And that was really great because it was ultimately sort of an accountability partner who knew, you know, what were the best things to be doing. You know, would kind of push me and say, have you been, you know, prioritizing personal life, meditation, exercise, all the things that you kind of commit to, you know, with that person. So,
but
that
someone on your side.
Totally.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly, I mean, that's the point. They're for you. And as you've developed your relationship with Nick, and again, the conscious conversations you've had with him, the different roles now, I believe that you've stepped back from being the co-CEO and you're involved with all sorts of other bits of the business and you've got more people in there. You must be in like the perfect position, as it were, to take things in the right direction. Is that how it's feeling now?
Yeah, definitely. And I think it was, you know, Nick and I kind of playing to our strengths. Being co-CEO is challenging as well. So it's great, you know, him taking on the baton. He's done an amazing job at that. Yeah, and other incredible team members as well. And yeah, it's really allowed me to do more of this kind of stuff, which has been really fun. But also some spicy special projects, you know, big partnerships. Really just supporting the business where I can. So it's been really good.
And just one last thing, this Ocean Co. that was set up in 2023, the track and trace, which sounds sort of, it reminds me of COVID, but of course this is about the...
Good kind of track and trace.
Yeah, a nice kind of track and trace, like where's it been, how much plastic has been, you know, saved, as it were, in this product. These things, are there more of them coming down the line? Have you got other ideas?
Yeah, so we always had a dream about having that kind of traceability. You know, all the cool sustainability initiatives and the most sort of cutting edge ones have got that. And so we really wanted to enable people to see where they've made an impact. We partner with a lot of companies as well who do, you know, co-branded products for their staff, events. And so for them to be able to see, you know, the impact that they've made, you know, if they've got 1,000 ocean bottles, they've collected equivalent of 1 million plastic bottles. That's really great. And so, yeah, we built that really for ourselves. And then we saw kind of an opportunity to allow other brands to do what we're doing and kind of, you know, add plastic collection to
bigger
to
the tent,
things.
Right? Bigger the tent, the better.
Exactly. Yeah. So we've got a long way to go on that one, but it's still in motion. And
but it's a big idea, and that's the thing. If you can get people behind it, then that momentum builds, and that's a kind of long-term play.
Exactly.
It's not going to get fixed next week. I know you want to. We're going to have to ask your song choice and why you chose it in a moment, and we're going to be closing too fast. I've read that you are going to be sailing around the world within the next 5 years. I'm going to ask you, because I'm now your coach, are you going to do this? Can you commit to it right now here on Jazz
Shakers?
Are we going to lock in? Will, is it what are you actually going to do it?
I am determined to do it. It's been a dream for a very long time. And so, luckily, my other half, Megan, she is on board.
Literally, or just from the side?
Not quite on board yet, literally. But yeah, she's up for it. And yeah, really excited to do that. I can't think of a better adventure.
Feels like a Netflix series of some sort.
It's a sort of full circle thing as well, yeah, getting back out at sea, you know, sort of being dreamt of getting back on the boat, back on the water, yeah.
And actually, that is what a great way of bringing to life exactly what Ocean Bottle is all about. Have the cameras going, have the podcast going. I can visualise it now.
Yeah, we'll get you out there. Yeah, episode.
I was angling, literally. It's been great to talk to you. Well, really, a brilliant project. It's more than a project. It's kind of core to human existence and how we interact with our planet. So really good luck with that, and good luck with enjoying the journey. Good luck with enjoying the ride. Just before I let you disappear, what's your song choice and why have you chosen it?
It's What a Wonderful World by Louis Armstrong. And it is actually my favourite song choice because it was my grandparents' favourite song. And, you know, it's, you know, I think what it speaks to is definitely close to my heart. It is a wonderful world, so let's protect it.
Louis Armstrong, of course, with What a Wonderful World. The song choice of my business shaper today, Will Pearson. He talked about the importance of alignment in values between him and his co-founder, Nick. Really critical as you think about who is going to go on the journey with you. He talked about creating a product that was best in its category, not simply driven by impact, which is critical, but actually the product standing on its own two feet. If you don't enjoy the journey, he was told by one of his wise board members, no one else will for you. A really smart piece of advice. That's it from me and Jazz Shapers. Have a lovely weekend.
Jazz Shapers on Jazz FM. In partnership with Mishkondorea. It's business, but it's personal.
We hope you enjoyed that edition of Jazz Shapers. You'll find hundreds more guests available for you to listen to in our archive. To find out more, just search Jazz Shapers in iTunes or your favourite podcast platform, or head over to mishkon.com/Jazz Shapers.